Good morning. You are listening to The Beacon. Over there.
Yes, I am here.
You are here.
Without my coffee and without my omelet. I ordered an omelet and I didn't get it.
You have a story there.
I was going to have breakfast with the rest of the listeners.
Amazing.
And then it didn't come.
Why didn't it come, Brian?
Well, there was some confusion between the address.
Oh, what type of confusion?
Did you know there's an 1850 West Roosevelt Road in Batavia?
I would imagine there are other 1850 West Roosevelt Roads in the world, yes.
Yeah, so folks, be careful when you're ordering from Uber Eats.
So somebody at 850 West Roosevelt Road in Batavia got a delicious omelet.
That's correct.
Actually,
it was a car repair service.
It was a car repair service?
Yes.
I'm sure they're very appreciative.
Very appreciative, yes. So someone had a nice meal. It wasn't me.
So maybe they owe you a car repair then.
Yes.
Maybe you can pay. They can pay it forward.
Well, I don't know. I'm not going to go out to Batavia. It's a little far away.
That's a trek.
Yeah. But welcome to the show, everyone. Good morning. This is The Beacon. Yeah. We are, yeah.
You are here. I'm at the airport right now.
Oh.
I'm not really here right now. I am flying home to surprise my mom for her 70th birthday.
Oh, wow.
Yes, her birthday's on Monday, so TJ and I are flying home for a couple of days. We're going on a cruise in Lake Tahoe tomorrow, so it's going to be...
Ooh.
It's going to be really nice. She has no idea we're coming.
And obviously she doesn't listen to the show.
Well, it's... because if I'm at the airport now, I'm not there yet. It'll be the one time in 10 years she decides to listen, right?
Exactly.
That's what's going to happen. Darn it.
I didn't know she was coming.
Exactly. I was thinking when this aired, I would already be there and the surprise would have already been revealed, but... That is not the case, so I'll have to enlist my brother to make sure she's busy at, well, it'll be 5:30 in the morning there.
Yeah, but she can listen at any time because we have it on our website.
Yeah.
Chicago Lighthouse.
She won't. She's not getting up and listening to our podcast first thing Saturday morning. So I feel assured that she will, that this will not ruin the surprise.
Quite a milestone, 70 years.
70 years. And boy, I will tell you, this woman is young at heart. It is tremendous. Like, she was in a biker club called the Biker Chicks until
Does she still have her cut?
They would go on bike rides through wine country, like 30, 40 mile bike rides through wine country. And she stopped because I might've said this on the air last fall, she was hit by a car on one of her bike rides. And she downplayed it on the phone to me, but apparently it was like a big deal. Like if she hadn't been wearing her helmet, she would be dead. It was that type of, and she was knocked unconscious and the ambulance had to come and take her to the hospital. So it was a pretty big deal. And at that point, she just decided she was done. She was ready to retire the bike. She had had a bike accident a couple of years earlier that had busted her hip. And so she's kind of like, you know what? I'm just kind of getting too old for this. But her spirit remains intact of a 25-year-old. And she has more of a social life at 70 than I do at 42. And, so she's just living her best life.
Yeah, mom's a biker chick.
She is a biker chick.
People have told me who ride bikes because at one point I myself wanted to take up riding.
Mm-hmm.
But they tell me that no matter how good a rider you are, you always fall at some point.
I guess that's true.
Yeah. When I was a kid, I wanted a mini bike, but I couldn't get it because they were not allowed in the city of Chicago.
Like those mini bikes that have motors?
Yeah.
Okay.
And then I was going to go on to the big Harleys and that
kind
of thing. But it didn't happen. But it's a fantastic mode of transportation, I think. A lot of fun, but you have
for
to be careful.
For bicycles or motorcycles?
For motorcycles.
Oh, okay. My mom's a bike rider. I don't know if that was clear. Was that clear?
Obviously not.
Obviously not.
Oh.
I it if my mom rode a Harley.
Oh, no, she rides a bike rider.
A bicycle. Yes.
All right. Well, just to forget about everything you just said.
That was
a cute story, though.
I like that story. I forever wanted a Harley, and in fact, I bought a motorcycle helmet when I was, I don't know, in my early 20s, like manifesting that one day I will have a motorcycle. And I never actually had one. My ex-husband, Chris, has one that's been parked in a garage for years now. But when we first started dating, we would ride it a lot. And it was, I mean, I loved it so much. But then I had TJ, and I don't know, something changed in me. Like, I just...
Well, yeah, you have to have responsibilities because cycling, as I said, can be somewhat dangerous. Because sometimes people driving cars don't always make room for them.
Right. And people, I mean, California, there's helmet laws, but out here, there's no helmet laws.
There's not?
Here? No. Illinois does not have a motorcycle, does not have a helmet
law. Oh, well, that explains. This morning, I saw a guy riding a Harley, and he didn't have on a helmet or a jacket.
Yeah, right.
Or anything.
Right.
He just had on the heavy boots.
Right. Well, yeah, that's going to protect him if he gets into a big accident. So on that note, should we get things moving?
Yes.
What do we got going on today, B?
Well, we are going to be talking to the director of Deafblind Services, and that's Joanne Rushing. And, you know, she's been at the Lighthouse for 13 years.
Wow.
And she provides independent living skills training, advocacy, telecommunications, equipment assessment, and training. She does a lot.
Yeah,
and
this is a whole paragraph on her. Usually our excerpts, that's what I'm looking for, our excerpts on our guests are one or two sentences, and we've got a whole paragraph here.
And she also manages the Deafblind Club.
Whew.
And, you know, we're always mentioning the fact that we're having various events and things of that nature to help support the programs here at the Lighthouse. So this is one of those programs in which the proceeds from all of those events goes to. So you'll have an opportunity to hear from her exactly what it is they do and how they help people. And she goes out to people's homes and helps them adjust when they first become visually impaired. Yeah. So we'll hear all about that. So Joanne Rushing is on tap.
I'm glad that she's here today.
Yeah.
I don't think we've ever had her on as a guest.
Yeah, you two should meet because you're both signed.
Right? We've never met, so we should cross paths. Yes, you are correct.
And just as an aside, mm-hmm. it says here that she's fluent in American Sign Language. Does that mean that there are other sign languages that are particular to other countries?
Yes, that is exactly what it means. And in fact, there's a few different sign systems within America. American Sign Language is the most commonly used, but there's also Signing Exact English, which is another one that is often taught to children. But fun fact, if you go to another English-speaking country like England or Australia, their sign language systems are not similar to ours at all. So me being fluent in American Sign Language, were I to travel to Australia or England, I would not be able to understand the sign language systems over there.
So is there a Tower of Babel story that
No idea.
Okay, it's just strange that there would not be one consistent system.
That is a, like, the question of the year is why is there not a universal system of sign language, which would be very cool because then wherever you travel, mm-hmm. if you knew this system, you'd be able to communicate with others, but it doesn't exist. So, I mean, there is a language called universal sign language, but it's not like you can learn it and then go to any other country and talk to anybody there. It's very different. So that perfect language that unites every human being on Earth does not exist. As nice as it would be.
Well, there's a project for someone.
There you go. Take it on. Got nothing else going on.
All right. And, of course, you yourself will have another engaging and happy story for us for the off actor. We'll find out what's highly recommended from Sandy and Brett. And, of course, we'll spend some time in Luke's laboratory and find out exactly what kind of bike he rides.
Yeah, he's going on a Harley ride today.
Find out exactly what is new in assistive technology. So we have all of those things coming up right here on the Beacon Show. Thanks for joining us. I'm Brian Hawkins.
I'm Lainey Kleeman.
So come on back. We're the Beacon here on WCPT 8:20 a.m.
Hi, everyone. This is Alex Trebek, the host of Jeopardy. If your question is, How can someone who is blind enjoy the latest magazine writing and not have to pay a penny? Then the answer is Choice Magazine Listening. Every other month, we'll send you hours of stimulating, unabridged articles, short stories, and poetry from writers such as Russell Baker, Derek Walcott, Joyce Carol Oates, Bill Moyers, and Margaret Atwood. These free special speed cassettes are sent to anyone unable to read because of physical limitations. If you're interested, write today to Listening, Box 10, Port Washington, New York, 11050. We'll also tell you how to get the necessary free Library of Congress talking book player. So write Listening, Box 10, Port Washington, New York, 11050. Or call 516-883-8280. That's 516-883-8280. Thank you.
Well, joining me now on the program is Joanne Rushing. She's the program director for the Deaf Blind Program at the Chicago Lighthouse. Welcome to the program, Joanne. How are you this morning?
Hi, I'm great. Thank you for having me.
Well, yeah, we wanted to get you on. I think, you know, from time to time, we talk to the directors of various programs here, and we hadn't had you on. So we wanted to talk about your program, because it's really a very important program here at the Lighthouse, the Deaf Blind Program. Can you tell us about the program and what you do there?
Yes, I'm glad to talk about this because it is very exciting. And the main reason is because at the Chicago Lighthouse, the Deafblind program is the only kind that is in Illinois in providing services for people who have the dual disability loss of having a vision and hearing impairment. And we provide services not only in the Chicagoland, but all over the state of Illinois. So I have myself and Mindy Joy Mayer, who is on my staff, and together we provide services that encompass a couple of different grants, and one of them is the Title 20, which allows us to meet someone who is deafblind in their home and provide services. And sometimes they will be able to come to the Lighthouse. And some of those services we provide in that grant is to teach sign language to someone who maybe has lost their hearing life, so that they're able to access another way to communicate. We also provide advocacy, getting deafblind individuals involved in the community, whether they want to volunteer or do a small part-time job. We help them sign up for transportation. We connect them to other organizations that can serve them as well. And the other part of the grant we do throughout the state is for the I Can Connect. The I Can Connect program is a federal program funded through the FCC, the Federal Communications Commission. And we have been doing it now for a little over 5 years. And this program allows us to assess individuals who have the dual disability loss of being deaf and blind and income qualified that allows them to receive telecommunications equipment. And once we've identified that they do qualify, we will purchase the equipment that best serves them so that they're able to go on the internet, search for jobs, or they can do email, go on Facebook, do texting, FaceTime, to communicate with individuals. It's a great program, and we have provided around 174 individuals throughout the state of Illinois with this program, in which they've received something like a desktop computer, laptop, Braille display, iPads, smartphones, anything to help them with telecommunications.
And what's necessary for them to qualify for this program?
What they need to qualify is to give us information about their hearing and vision loss. They do have to identify as a person with a dual disability, along with their household income, because to qualify for their income, they have to be at 400% of poverty level, and that would mean for one person, they could make up to $48,560, and for two people, it's like $65,840. And as long as they're able to use the equipment and qualify with their disability and income, and we can provide that. Once they receive the equipment, then we can provide training on how to use it.
Now, as far as the training is concerned, you yourself and I guess your staff, you make yourself available by conducting home visits as well as perhaps the individuals coming into the lighthouse?
That's correct. Yes. I do a lot of traveling. In fact, today I was in Champaign. Yesterday I was in Downers Grove. The other day I was in Mattoon. But I have gone as far south as Metropolis. I have a client down there. I'm going to see a client next week in Marion. We've gone to Rockford and many other towns all over in Illinois.
So for a person who wants to avail themselves to these services, how would they do that? How would they get involved? Do they simply call you? Or?
Yes, they can certainly call through our program or send us an email. We do get referrals from counselors with Department of Rehab Services. We get a lot of referrals through vision teachers, interpreters of the deaf, family members. So we do a lot of outreach throughout the state so that we can inform people about this wonderful program. And, you know, I do tell people, because people usually say, well, if it's, you know, free, it's too good to be true. Well, I tell them it is free, and it is true that they can get free equipment as long as they are eligible.
Now, in addition to all of the training and advocacy and the equipment assessment and all those things, there's another part to your services, and that's the Deaf Blind Club. You want to tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, the Deaf Blind Club, it used to be called LACOBDA, which stood for the Club of Blind Deaf Adults, which is a French term, but in the last few years, we've changed the name to Chicago Deaf Blind Alliance. And the reason for that primarily is so that we could set it up on the website. When people are searching, if they typed in like deaf blind, then it will bring this link up, which is easier to identify, because with the name LACOBDA, not many people would know what that would stand for. So the Deaf Blind Club, in fact, we are meeting tomorrow. It meets generally once a month, with the exception we do not meet like January, June, or August. However, we are meeting this month because we are doing our Deaf Blind Retreat, which I can talk about that shortly. But the Deaf Blind Club are members who are deaf blind. And when I say deaf blind, that's a term that I use loosely. So anyone who has a hearing loss and vision loss can attend. We also invite volunteers and interpreters who can come and work with our individuals and provide them with communication and environmental information, which is very helpful, because without volunteers like that, we would not be able to run the club and the meetings. But it's a great social group, and it also allows people to not only socialize and meet with others, but learn about the different types of communication, and we'll have programs set up so that they can learn more about what's going on, the latest about news for people who are deafblind. And we do have a couple individuals that come from Indiana that attend as well. So it's a great program where we do provide lunch and have different programs come and talk about maybe technology that deafblind would use or anything else that's going on that deafblind can benefit from.
And where is the retreat this year?
This year we are having our deafblind training and retreat. It's going to be held at the Seneca Retreat Center in Chicago, and it's going to be July 24th through the 27th. And we do have around 50 individuals signed up, which includes both people who are deafblind and interpreters, or what we refer to as SSP, support service providers. And this is a great event that we have, and it's the only one that happens in Illinois. But we meet and socialize with deafblind individuals and learn how to communicate and use interpreting skills with people who are deafblind. It's a hands-on experience, so it's like a training too. And also learn the necessary skills and techniques to work with individuals who have a combined vision and hearing loss, and working with deafblind on using different modes of communication, because not every person who is hard of hearing or deaf knows how to use sign language, never learned. And then the retreat also provides training on how to work with deafblind individuals who use guide dogs, and also learn techniques and strategies that are used by deafblind, such as learning how to track an individual's sign language in their field of vision, tactile interpreting, which is the hand-over-hand, mapping techniques, being a human guide provider. And then, of course, we're going to go on field trips in Chicago and go see the sites at Millennial Park, and just a wealth of information, in which we'll have workshops that will be provided by professionals that are flying in who they themselves are deafblind. So it's a wonderful retreat.
And in addition to the retreat, your regular club meetings, so sometimes parties and outings and things like that?
Yes. Because a lot of people, I love it when we go out in the community with our deafblind members, because then it gives a sense to people in the community how deafblind can interact with others, so that they become aware and know about how to deal with people who are deafblind, because so many people are just, I guess, kind of leery or not sure how to approach someone who's deafblind and what to do. And so we're out there just educating the community about them.
So for individuals who would either love to join the club or be, as you call them, an SSP, someone who volunteers and helps out, how would they get in touch with you to sign up for that?
Well, they could certainly call the Chicago Lighthouse and ask for me and let me know that they're interested in wanting to attend the club, or they want to go to the retreat. They can contact Mindy Joy Mayer as well. And my number is 312-666-1331, extension 3415. Or you can reach us by my email, which is joanne.rushing@chicagolighthouse.org. And that's joanne.rushing@chicagolighthouse.org.
And she's a program director for the Deaf Blind Program. And thank you very much for coming on and talking about it. This is The Beacon. We'll be right back.
This is Coach Mike Ditka. I'm asking you to support my friends at the Chicago Lighthouse, who are providing critical educational services to children who are blind, visually impaired, or multi-disabled. Through its innovative preschool, Birth to Three, and other cutting-edge programs, the Lighthouse is making a big difference in the lives of these children.
This is Dr. Janet Slick, President and CEO of the Chicago Lighthouse. These are exciting times here at the Chicago Lighthouse. The Chicago Lighthouse provides a community of comprehensive care for people who are blind, visually impaired, disabled, and veterans. To find out how you can help, call 312-997-3675 or visit us at chicagolighthouse.org.
We're back. The Kleeman and Hawkins Show. Yeah, so we did.
Also known as the Beacon.
Right. Right, I forgot about that. That's true.
It's a public service of the Chicago Lighthouse.
Yes.
And I don't know how much of a service we're doing.
We are serving ourselves. I don't know if we're serving anybody else. But we did a little bit more depth of the research on a Harvard tuition. And it sounds like it comes out to about, with health insurance, with all the unbilled costs, about $76,000 a year.
Oh, okay.
So you're still coming out of there with, you know, $300,000 if you go only for 4 years. But to the point you made, you have a Harvard degree now, so you can go.
You can be president.
Right, exactly. So $300,000, drop in the bucket.
So I was wrong, but still.
But still. You were close. I think you just had your time frame mixed
but no
up.
Cigar.
Yes. So,
all right.
There we go. All right, we are. We got Brett and Sandy coming up here with their Around Town highly recommended segment. Hopefully they got something good for us as we head, like, headstrong into the summer.
I don't know what colleges they went to.
I don't know.
Good morning, everyone. I am Sandy Murillo.
And I am Brett Shishkoff.
And welcome to It's Highly Recommended. But I know, Brett, that you've been doing some binge watching lately on Netflix.
I like watching stuff on Netflix just because of audio description, and I'll touch on some of the audio description that we had for these two shows that I'm going to review today.
Sure.
The first one I'm going to start off with is Altered Carbon.
Mm-hmm.
It's been out for a couple months now. But it's for people who are trying to figure out like what it's closely related to. It'd be something similar to like a Total Recall or, maybe like Demolition Man.
Okay.
Kind of a futuristic sci-fi,
yeah,
of what the future looks like. If gives you the opportunity to kind of like freeze yourself or put yourself in a future time. So the lead character, Kovach, he's part of a organization called Envoy,
mm-hmm,
and he becomes trained to be kind of like an assassin type. He has lots of really, really amazing skills, and so he is eventually, like right off the bat, he's caught by this organization that's trying to stop the Envoy, and the Envoy are trying to stop the spread of this technology that gives people the opportunity to, after they die, they can actually continue to move on to another person's body.
Sure.
With their consciousness still intact. This Envoy organization is trying to stop it. They're kind of like rebels, and everybody's after them. And so the rich in this future, they have all the power because they're able to afford this technology and be able to make copies of their own body.
Mm-hmm.
So it ends up that this rich benefactor wakes up Kovach in the future and wants him to investigate a murder that happened.
Mm-hmm.
So the guy, he's still alive, and he wants to research his own murder.
Oh, wow.
And so it ends up that he pays Kovach by saying, okay, well, if you figure out who murdered me, I will let you be free, because he's actually like a prisoner.
Sure.
And so the only way that he was being woken up is that he needed somebody with a lot of money to be able to pay for that.
Mm-hmm.
So he's put into a body of who used to be like a detective, and it ends up that he's being followed by a woman detective who is kind of, you're not really sure why she's following him, and you eventually figure out throughout the season what's going on. But there's lots of twists and turns. It's a little bit violent, but it's definitely, you don't really know what's going to happen. It's not like anything I've ever seen before. So if you're looking for something a little bit new with sci-fi, It's definitely enjoyable. I had fun watching it. There are, like I said, there are some tough parts to watch because there is some of that violence. But Kofach is—he's a very witty guy. The detective that's following him, she's very feisty and kind of keeps up with his wit. So there is like that sarcastic, witty banter between the two of them that's really, really kind of fun to watch. And but it is for more of an older crowd. I would say that if you're a teenager or younger, the parents probably might want to look for something else. But for most adults, it's definitely something that I think they would enjoy. Right now, it's probably the best show that I've seen on Netflix.
Sure. Yeah.
In my opinion, it's highly recommended by me, especially if you're a sci-fi fan that likes the futuristic. What does humanity look like in the future if death wasn't something that was the end-all be-all of that person's existence?
Well, and I know, Brett, that you've also been watching a show that has been very popular on Netflix, 13 Reasons Why.
I did. I was a little skeptical of trying to watch this. It is a high school drama. But it's not like most other high school dramas that just seem to be like cheesy, corny.
Sure.
It touches on some really tough situations.
Yeah.
Basically, it's based around a girl. Her name's Hannah Baker. She ends up committing suicide.
Mm-hmm.
And how you're introduced to it is Clay, who's the lead character of the show, he ends up getting a box of cassette tapes.
Mm-hmm.
And so he starts to listen, and it's her recording how it led up to her suicide.
Mm.
So all of the people that she felt from like when she started at this school to the end of her life, of all of these people that kind of led to her committing suicide. And so he's going, each episode is basically him going through each one of the tapes. And so he figures out, okay, it started with this guy and then it went to this girl. And so as he's figuring out what these people have done to her to lead to the bad reputation that she had while she was alive, and just she just constantly was struggling to keep friends, and it was based off of just rumors that other people were basically saying about a situation that occurred, and she's basically trying to right the wrongs to let people know that what they heard through the grapevine and through these rumors isn't exactly what happened. And so the kids who are on this tape, the high school students that are on this tape, they actually are trying to keep it quiet.
Mm-hmm.
And Clay, he's the one trying to not keep it quiet. He's trying to hold these kids accountable for what happened to Hannah. And you find out as the season goes on that Clay and Hannah, they were actually very, very close to one another. They worked at the same movie theater together. And, you know, they both kind of liked each other but didn't know that they liked each other. And so it was, you're just kind of finding out. You're kind of watching this, like, tragic romance, almost like a Romeo-Juliet type thing that's going on in the first season.
Yeah.
Where you know what the outcome already is. We all know what the story of Romeo and Juliet is, and you already know in this beginning of the first episode that Hannah Baker killed herself.
Wow.
So you already know that as you're watching this story unfold of these two kind of getting closer and closer, all of a sudden something happens where a tragic end happens, and your heart kind of aches for what this girl is going through. I've just finished the first episode, or the first season, I should say.
Mm-hmm.
And the second season is currently being done, and they actually are releasing an episode a week. And so I still think that they're releasing the second season. And so I'm waiting until the entire second season is up and going. But I imagine it's actually second season is based around this trial that's going on between Hannah's parents and the school district. The school district is trying to show that it wasn't their fault, that the school wasn't at fault for this girl committing suicide.
Mm-hmm.
And Hannah's parents are trying to show that because the school was negligent in not trying to stop the bullying and all these other things that were happening, they don't believe Hannah's suicide was exactly just her fault, that there was something that the school could have done if they were paying attention to their daughter, that there was some responsibility that the school should have. So now going in from the first season into the second season, it's probably going to be the trial that you're basically going to be paying attention to, if I could imagine. Just knowing how the story was going from the first end of the first season, I feel that's where the second season goes.
Great. Well, that's about all the time we have for this week's It's Highly Recommended segment.
We will be back with more Lighthouse Beacon after this.
Exercise is hard. So is maintaining a healthy diet. Of course, neither is half as hard as dying. Sadly, type 2 diabetes, heart disease, and stroke kill nearly a million people a year. Even sadder, most of these deaths are preventable with a few lifestyle changes, including regular activity, healthier eating, and not smoking. Talk to your doctor about your risk for type 2 diabetes and heart disease. And if your doctor recommends lifestyle changes or medication, listen. The reason so many die is because not enough are willing to change. You can stop it, starting right now. It's your life. Listen to your doctor. Eat better. Get moving. Visit checkupamerica.org or call 1-800-DIABETES. A message from the American Diabetes Association.
You know, I was thinking, maybe we should come up with another theme song for The Off Factor.
Ooh, we should, huh?
Yeah, something epic.
Things that make you go, ah.
Well, maybe something
not, who was that? Who sang that? Things that make you go, CNC Music Factory.
Oh, really?
Things that make you go, Things that make you go, something like that. It was in the 80s, I think.
Yeah, we'll see.
Yeah, we should. We had a cute one for, what's the other segment I did?
The apples, bananas, yeah. And tarts.
Let us turn up the beat. That's what it was. Yeah. Right. Yeah, I like that song. That was a cute one. So we should find something similar.
It was too short.
Good call.
Yeah.
Good call.
And also, you know, in the past shows, we've talked about the fashion clocks, the fashion wall clocks that the Chicago Lighthouse has. And there's a new development in that area, believe it or not. Now, previously, you could get the fashion clocks at select Target stores in the Chicagoland area. Also, you could go on the ChicagoLighthouse.org website and you could purchase clocks. And Amazon, you could get it there. Now, they've added another outlet.
What?
Yes.
We've already hit the monsters.
Yes. Well, another monster is now to be considered if you'd like to purchase a fashion clock, and they're available now on Overstock.com.
Really?
Yes.
Wow, that's cool.
Just go to www.overstock.com, then search Chicago Lighthouse Clocks, and they will all be there.
Fantastic.
And now, believe it or not, ladies and gentlemen,
it's hard to believe.
The Awe Factor.
Thank you. We are in the season of graduations. Last week, I did a story about a young man who took the bus at 4:30 a.m. every day to get to high school so he could graduate with his class. And today, I am talking about a young man who was once mocked for constantly raising his hand in class. You know, those kids who always know the answers and they're always raising their hands. And then all the kids that don't know the answers are like, you're whatever, teacher's pet, or, you know, they're just mean because kids are mean.
In my class, it was Jackie.
See, you remember, mine was Ryan. I remember that. Ryan DeFord, bless your heart. I'm sure he's, like, richer and more successful than all of us combined at this point. Actually, I went to high school with a young man named Wes, and he was so brilliant, but he was the perfect nerd, you know, like, every stereotype you hear and see about nerds, he was a nerd. And so, of course, he was a target because he was brilliant and he looked the part. And so he was such a target. This dude got into USC, University of Southern California, as a junior, like our junior year of high school. He was accepted into USC, went to USC, ended up like founding his own tech company. I mean, I think that the guy is probably worth millions now. And that is like a true nerds to success, like a Bill Gates story right there, right? So, you know, if we have any younger listeners in our audience, don't make fun of the nerds. Become friends with them because they can be super rich one day and then that can benefit you. So adopt a nerd, be friends, take them under your wings, protect them from the bullies, and, you know, it might work out well for you in the end. So anyway, back to our story. When Richard Jenkins was a kid, he was always raising his hand in class, so much so that his peers started mocking him and taunting him and calling him Harvard to make him feel bad for participating. Because, of course, only kids would think that calling somebody Harvard is an insult. But they did, because they intended it to be an insult. He was an inner-city kid from Philadelphia. His family lost their home to foreclosure when he was in sixth grade, and he and his two brothers spent the next 2 years moving in and out of homeless shelters and hotels across Florida and Tennessee. They struggled to find stability, but Richard realized that a good education could be the means to escape such hardship. So after that, he consistently earned good grades, even while battling terrible migraines that plagued him with a lot of stress, because clearly he didn't have a lot of stability in his home life. Then his dad had a heart attack. In the summer of eighth grade, he became, Richard, as a result of his dad's heart attack, became very mentally ill and was hospitalized, and essentially they just started throwing medication at him. But he was eventually able to fight through it, get back to school, get his work done, because he realized that at the end of the day, the education is what's going to get him out of his dire circumstances. So in the 11th grade, things began to turn around after his mother urged him to apply to a boarding school for at-risk youth from single-parent homes. So he was accepted into the boarding school, immediately dove into dozens of school activities, and earned A's across the board. Graduation is coming. Richard sent out applications to a number of Ivy League schools, but he had one school in his mind, in his heart, that in particular he really wanted to get into. So one day he was checking to see if, and this just marks my age, I was reading this paragraph and I didn't understand what it was saying, because when we were accepted into colleges, we've received letters in the mail, right? Mm-hmm. But now kids, like, online, they check online to see if they've been accepted or not. And so it just took me a minute to, like, understand what this paragraph meant. It says he set the tabs on his computer showing the best schools he had applied to. He applied to Penn. He got waitlisted. He applied to Yale. He got rejected. And he figured at that point Harvard was a lost cause. So he opened the last tab, and there was a video saying, "Welcome to the class of 2022. And he said, "Tears started streaming down my face because I was so happy." He alone made it happen. He had no resources. He had no support. He had no help. He was just a young man, pulled himself up by the bootstraps, made it happen for himself, overcoming homelessness, poverty, physical pain, and he ended up receiving a full scholarship to the university that was once his.
4 years?
A full scholarship, yes, to the university that once kids used to taunt him, Harvard. So he got a full scholarship to Harvard. He graduated from the boarding school as his class valedictorian, and he plans to study computer science at Harvard with a special interest in artificial intelligence. So the full ride scholarship covers his tuition, room, and board, but his godfather did start a GoFundMe page to raise money for stuff like clothes and a good tablet to store all of his textbooks on. And this is a really sweet quote. It says, "Honestly, this kid, although he's poor, doesn't need the help. It says he will work his way through college, pay for his expenses himself, and won't ask for anyone's help. But he deserves a reward." And in just a matter of days after this news story was posted online, the campaign surged past its original goal to raise $40,000. So I haven't checked on it today, but he's doing just fine.
Wow.
So there
full
you go.
Scholarship, full ride.
To
First
Harvard.
Of all, it's Harvard.
Harvard, in the Harvard Yard.
And second of all, this is a few years ago, I checked to find out what the admission would be, the tuition for Harvard.
Yes.
And at that time, I don't know what it is now, and if I'm not mistaken, it was like $330,000 a semester.
No, no, it can't possibly be. You'd come out of college with millions of student loan or debt. There's no way it can be $330,000. Maybe $33,000 a semester?
Unless I'm mistaken.
We'll have to check that out. Dying to know.
That's a pretty full ride.
It's a pretty scholarship any way you cut it, whether it's $33,000 or $330,000 a semester. You're getting a pretty sweet ride with a full Harvard scholarship. But yeah, he deserves it.
And there were certain things that you had to have to start school with, like your own computer.
Right.
And yeah, it was a whole big deal. So that's really great for him.
Yeah. Yeah, because, I mean, once you get there, and not just Harvard, but anywhere, once you actually get there, there's all the expenses on top of expenses. So your tuition only covers your room and board. Okay, so here we go. Harvard tuition, The total 2018 to 2019 cost of attending Harvard College without financial aid is $46,340 for tuition and $67,580 for tuition, room, board, and fees combined. Now, I don't know if that's per semester or per year, but it's not $333,000
really?
A semester.
Oh, that's good then.
Yes. I mean, that could be what...
That, but.
No. It could be... like you come out of Harvard with that type of debt, you know, I mean, that's not always out of the realm of possibility, especially at a big school like Harvard. But again, the tuition, room and board only cover so much. Once you get there, you still have your daily living expenses, your food, your clothing, your books. I mean, none of that's covered. So it all, you know, it adds up for sure.
All right. Well, that was a very interesting and heartwarming story. We're going to come back with more stuff here on The Beacon.
That's us.
One in six of the wounded U.S. soldiers evacuated from Iraq and Afghanistan battle zones suffered eye injuries. That's the highest rate of eye injuries since the Civil War. The National Library Service for the Blind and Physically Handicapped, NLS, part of the Library of Congress, is stepping up to help. NLS works with military hospitals, rehab centers, and groups such as the Blinded Veterans Association to make sure that service members who have sacrificed so much for their country can still experience the pleasures of reading. Through the free NLS Talking Book Program, eligible veterans have access to thousands of bestsellers, biographies, westerns, self-help books, and more, and a variety of magazines. Veterans receive priority service from NLS, but any U.S. resident who is blind, has low vision, or cannot hold a book because of a physical illness or disability may sign up for the program. To learn more about what NLS can do for you or a friend or loved one, visit www.loc.gov/NLS or call 1-888-NLS-READ.
Well, welcome back to The Beacon, everybody. I'm Brian Hawkins.
I'm Lainey Kleeman.
Yes, you are.
I am.
And, you know, coming up pretty soon, Friday, June 22nd, actually, is the Seeing What's Possible annual gala for 2018.
That's in 2 weeks from yesterday.
Okay.
Yesterday was the 8th, so the 22nd.
All right. I'm guessing you're better at math than me.
We'll go with that.
Yeah.
And it's not saying much, but.
Yeah, it's an evening of Greek cuisine, dancing, and live entertainment. And that way, as I said before, it's one of the fundraisers that the proceeds go to help employment services for people who are blind, visually impaired, disabled, or veterans, provides education, rehabilitation, and all those things. This year, we'll be honoring Steve and Georgianne Pangier, benefactors of the Lighthouse's Pangier Center for Inherited Retinal Diseases. And so tickets can be had. All you have to do is go to the ChicagoLighthouse.org website and dial up Seeing What's Possible annual gala, and you can purchase tickets there. Or you can call area code 312-447-3448 and ask for Lindsay Inglis, and she'll be able to set you up. So it should be a great time had by all.
It usually is.
Dancing, and not only for the guests, but also I think there are going to be Greek dancers. And of course, it's a Greek dinner because it's a Greek theme.
It is a Greek theme. So get your fancy togas out.
And what do you have, like a Greek favorite food or something?
I love falafel.
Falafel.
Oh my gosh. Falafel I could eat all day, every day.
Really? I never get good falafel.
Really?
It's always.
Have you been to Naf Naf Grill?
No.
Oh, it's so good. You know what it is.
Naf Naf Grill?
Naf Naf Grill. Yeah. It's a small chain around this area. I think maybe five or six. They have five or six different stores. But it's like Mediterranean food. And it's you walk up, and it's kind of like a Chipotle style, where you walk up and you sort of go down the assembly line, and they give you what you want. But they have the best, fluffiest pita bread I've ever had in my entire life. So if you ever are near Naf Naf and you want some good Mediterranean food, check it out.
Yes, well.
It's real good. And that was an unpaid plug, friends.
Naf
just from
Naf.
The
yeah, we should
passion
start getting
I have
paid
in my
for
heart.
This.
Right?
Exactly.
Free
nice.
Advertising. Well, you know what? If you're going to provide good food and good service and a consistently enjoyable experience, then you deserve a little free advertising.
Yeah. Well, I don't know about the food, but I do know someone who provides very good services, and that would be Luke Scriven.
Oh, boo Hallelujah.
Yes, he will come out to your home and help you with your technology problems. He will invite you out on the road to view all of the new technological advances. And so he's someone we can depend on to help in that area. And so we're going to swiftly go into his laboratory. He and Juan are there, and we'll see what they have to talk about.
Good morning, Luke. How are you? Good Saturday.
Yep.
So this week we're talking about different types of things that people are possibly dealing with when they have a multiple set of things that they have to overcome to try to balance out on top of having a visual impairment, correct?
Yeah, exactly. This all came about because this week I met a gentleman who, he was a doctor, but he needed to regain his medical license. And in order to do that, he had to sit an 8-hour exam, if you can believe that. So he needed to do that, and it involved using a computer in order to answer questions. And you know, so we would have to sit there for 8 hours using this computer. Now, there was two big issues here. One of them was his visual impairment. He had glaucoma, and that reduced his ability to use the computer, specifically due to issues with glare. And the other big problem was he had a neck injury, and this neck injury made it impossible for him to sit in one position for such a long time. It would have been extremely uncomfortable, and you know, essentially, he wouldn't have been able to do it. So we had to think about two different, you know, things which were going on there, and solutions which might help him overcome those issues. And I thought it was interesting because, you know, sometimes we have other issues as well as our visual impairments, which can make it more difficult to carry out those activities of daily living. In terms of this gentleman, what we needed to figure out was computer access, and some of the things that we talked about there, I wanted to share with the audience to give kind of ideas. One thing which could benefit a lot of people is a desk which can be put into different positions in terms of height. And so you can get desks where if you hit a lever, they will go into a standing position. So now you can stand and use your computer. And if you then push them down, they go back into a seated position, and then you can sit and use the computer. And obviously you could do that with a CCTV as well. So that's one potential solution. Another solution, this gentleman, he had to get close to the screen in order to read what was on the screen. And that was very bad for his neck, and also bad for the glare issues which he had. And so we examined the use of ZoomText, which is a computer magnification software which includes contrast enhancement and color change. And so for him, and generally for glaucoma, a black background with white text works well because it reduces a lot of the glare. And so that was one solution for the glare. And then magnification allowed him to sit further back from the computer screen, so he wasn't having to get into that position where his head was up against the screen and it was causing, you know, trouble for his neck. And so that also provided another solution. Some of the things which might be a little bit more out of the box, shall we say, I want to talk about some of those solutions. So for this gentleman, standing up was preferable to sitting down. Because of his neck issues. And so I already talked about a standing desk. Another thing which could be useful would be a handheld monocular, basically a telescope. So he could stand up somewhere in the room and use his monocular to focus in on the computer screen. And that would give him another potential position in which to view the computer screen. So that was another good solution. Another one that we had sounds very simple, but being a technologist, it's not always the type of thing that I would automatically think of, is having somebody available to read the questions from the computer screen to you. That way you can be anywhere in the room, listen to the questions, and you reply to them. Now, he still would be required to look at images of you know, patients with various skin diseases and things like that. So he still would have to look at the computer screen to some extent, but it would be vastly reduced. And so that was another potential solution. There's probably many, many other things which could be done. And this is obviously one specific example. But I guess the point is that, you know, if you do have physical issues, whether that be you are wheelchair bound or you have a neck injury or a back injury or something like that, which prevents you from staying in one position or makes it awkward to get to, you know, a particular device that you want to use. With a little bit of thought, there is going to be a solution that will help you access your assistive technology. And so if you do have a visual impairment as well as some other type of impairment, then, you know, give us a call. And we would be happy to discuss how we might be able to, help you out with that.
That's a great thing. And also, of course, you can also contact our Tools for Living store at 312-997-3683. And that's some great solutions for a lot of people, probably some things that didn't exist maybe even 5 years ago.
Well, you know, technology is always moving forward, and that's what keeps it interesting. So if you haven't, you know, thought about technological solutions for a few years, then it's definitely worth taking a look and seeing what's available now.
Thank you so much, Mr. Luke Scriven. That does it for this week's Luke's Laboratory. I'm Juan Suarez. Wanted to join us again next Saturday right here on The Beacon.
Hi, I'm Erica Borgren, Iraq veteran and director of the Illinois Department of Veterans Affairs. Our mission is to empower veterans and their families to thrive. Our agency is home to a team of veterans whose sole job is to help other veterans. But we can't do this work alone. We need Illinois veterans to stand up and be counted so we can better understand and serve our veteran community. You have already stood up to answer the call to service. Now, stand up and be counted to help the entire veteran community. Visit veterans.illinois.gov.
Are you ready for kids who eat healthy? Good nutrition can lead to great things. To find out how a healthy lifestyle can help your child succeed, go to mypyramid.gov. A public service announcement brought to you by the Ad Council and USDA.
That's it. Many thanks to our president and CEO, Dr. Janet Slick. All right, friends, thank you. Have a wonderful, safe week, and we will talk to you next week. Bye-bye.